Hello, everybody. This is Georgianne Hughes, and this is The Bite Show. And this is a very special evening. We have Doug Riggs, we have Stan Dale, and Lynn Marzulli, and Dan Webb. And we're going to be talking about many things concerning Nephilim and UFO saucers. As everybody knows, Stan Deo has been on many programs over the years. He has done a rewrite of his book, Cosmic Conspiracy. It's updated. Please get a copy. You can find it at Stan Deo's website, standeo.com, and it's Stan, D-E-Y-O.com. Lynn Marzulli, visit Lynn's website. He is the author of the Nephilim Trilogy. He has a very interesting blog that you would very much like to visit, I'm sure. And it's lamarzulli.net. That's lamarzulli.net. And, of course, Doug Riggs, go to The Bite Show, go to the audio library, click on Doug Riggs' name, and all the audio files and contact information is right there. So I'm going to turn this over to Doug, and we have some questions, gentlemen, that have been emailed to me that at some point in this recording I'd like to ask all of you your observations about these questions that we've got pending here. So fire away, Douglas.
All right. Thank you, Georgianne. We just want to thank you for this opportunity that you're giving to us to have this time together and to talk about the things that we feel are very critical for the time in which we live. So many thanks. I'd like to just begin by also thanking Lynn Marzulli and Stan Dale. The reason why I wanted to do this interview, of course, I know Lynn has been following somewhat what I've been doing, and I mentioned a little bit to you, Stan, on a conversation we had here about a week ago, that I've been working with generational satanic ritual abuse. And some of these people who come out of the royal families, Dan, who has been a part of our assembly for a number of years, is a descendant of the royal family who was highly programmed, and the whole agenda, of course, is to bring in the New World Order. And from my background, I have not been involved with any of the alien abductees or any of that kind of work. And so this is bringing together various different backgrounds, but the common thread that I would like to see established is that there is a hybrid program, and it's not just some apparition, but it is actually going on. There are not only UFO sightings increasing in numbers in terms of the manifestation of fallen angels, but if I understand Stan Dale and what you've been presenting, there's actual physical hardware that is also in the mix that is going to be a part of the final end-time deception. And so I wanted to bring a number of things to the table that would involve your background, Lynn, and your background, Stan, that perhaps has never been really clarified, at least in my mind. And so this is what we hope we can accomplish, is just to see what happens when you two guys begin to interact and we just trust the Lord to guide the process. And I didn't want to spend a lot of time in going into a lot of your background and what you've already shared on other broadcasts. When I heard your interview with Joyce Riley, which is excellent, I would recommend people go to your website and listen to some back broadcasts to bring up to date, you know, some of the things that you've already shared, Stan. Also on Radio Liberty, Dr. Stan has been interviewing you, and of course he interviews Lynn Marzulli, so people can go and pick up some of the things that you've been talking about that will, I don't think we need to repeat here tonight.
Yeah.
Okay.
I would like to just this is for Lynn and for Stan, that what would you consider, how would you define your greatest burden for this generation of Christians? What is the message that you would want to leave with the listeners tonight? Each one of you could just make a summary statement in terms of that which the Lord has been directing you in these most recent days. So, Lynn, why don't you go first? Or Sam.
Love you. From my vantage point, I just got back from the prophecy conference in Missouri, and it was held at a church with probably about 2,500 members, yet we had 45 people show up. Russ Dizdar was there, Mary Jo Schneller was there, Tony Kale, Greg Reed, and myself. He had five great speakers, variety of topics were discussed, mostly satanic ritual abuse on their end, and of course, on my end, the whole alien Nephilim slash agenda. What I see happening, and my greatest burden, is that I believe, and it's so funny that we're talking tonight, I'm not sure when this is going to be airing, but there was another 6.9 earthquake in China. I subscribe to USGS, so every time there's an earthquake over 6 points, they'll send me an email and I can go and explore it for myself. 6.9, it seems like we're seeing earthquake in diverse places on a weekly basis. Some of these are in the 7.2, loss of life. And, of course, all that to say, we are told in Matthew 24, Mark 13, Luke 21, specifically by Jesus himself, that when you see these things, what things? Earthquakes in various places, famines, pestilence, wars and rumors of wars. I've never seen it this heated, in my opinion. I'm just one guy looking through a lens, but that lens, of course, is a lens of prophecy and scripture. And I believe that the church is completely asleep and is about to be broadsided. We know from the words of Jesus saying that even the elect would be deceived if that were possible, that men faint from fear from what is coming on the earth, 2 Thessalonians, that Satan comes with all signs and lying wonders. These are dire warnings. And the fact that only 45 people showed up for this conference is, in my opinion, a barometer of where the church is at. They are completely asleep. And these are the people that are supposed to be the vanguard. And no, the secular people are absolutely clueless as to what is manifesting on the earth with impunity. Of course, I speak of the UFO phenomena with all of its different fingers, the alien abductions, the implants, the crop circles, the cattle and human mutilations, and of course the sightings, which are well over 300 per month. So my burden is that as sort of a watchman on the wall, if I can use Christianese or Christian terms, I continue to talk about this. I blog about it 6 days a week now, and to basically a very small sliver of Christians who are listening, for the most part, there's sort of a vicious ignorance in regard to the whole phenomenon. And that's a quote from Dr. Bill Deagle, who came up with that vicious ignorance. And that's really what it is. When you begin to talk about this in front of people, you get, they have no idea what's going on. They don't know what they don't know. And yet they're so adamant that nothing is happening and everything is fine. And so my burden is to try to wake up the slumbering church before it's too late. And it seems to me, and I'm about to close with this little diatribe here, it seems to me that in view of all the global events that are happening, that this thing is accelerating towards some sort of manifestation and climax, and I think it's sooner than later.
Yeah, thank you, Lynn. I totally concur. Stan, what's your greatest burden? And I know you've updated your book, so how would you like to follow up on Lynn's comment?
Well, I think I agree. I do agree with all that he said. Certainly, the feeling of urgency came on me almost the day after New Year's this year. I got an email from some woman. We get lots of emails and questions, and if they're silly questions, I just trash them. But if they're worth an answer, you know, I'm serious, I'll answer it. And she was asking me something about the meaning of the verses in Daniel 2, where he's talking, he's explaining the statue of the man that Nebuchadnezzar hadn't seen, and explaining about the toes of the statue being clay and iron and not mixing with the seed of man. What did I think about that? Of course, I've a long thought that this was exactly what it said. It was talking about crossbreeding between the fallen ones coming and mankind.
That's right.
I had never gone in and tried to translate, retranslate that in using the root Arabic and Chaldean Aramaic and Hebrew words. And so when I did, took me 2 months off and on during business and evenings to do it, but I started to find out things that were astounding that had not been purposely badly translated, but had been translated the best that people knew how, trying to fit alternate definitions of certain words into what the context was of the verse they'd already translated, which is, you know, that can be good and that can be bad. And when the book was sealed, when the Lord told Daniel, I'm sealing up the words of this book until the time of the end, I'd heard about that and I figured, well, I'd read about it in there. I thought, well, you know, I'm not the guy to come unseal the book of Daniel, but as I started to poke into this, I realized that I could, you know, portions of it. I've only dealt with 8 verses in this addition to the Cosmic Conspiracy, but those 8 verses are going to set people in the Christian and the Jewish faith right on their ear, because it's going to be telling about something straight from Daniel that is really spooky. And so that's my biggest press for now. I want to wake people up who are wanting to know, and I don't care whether Jewish or Muslim, Italian, or, you know, black or white or green. If they want to know, that's what I want to tell them. I want to help them understand why we are here on Earth, what is happening, how it's coming to conclusion, and what to watch out for if you're stuck on Earth during the time of the last Antichrist and the rule of Satan and him on the Earth here. And that is upon us almost instantly. So that's the great urgency I feel, guys.
Yeah, well, very good. And I know that, Len, you're in the process of writing a new book. I don't know if that has any factor in terms of where we are now in the sense of urgency you have, but is there any comment, or do you just want to wait until it comes out?
Basically, it'll probably come out in the fall. It's called The Cosmic Chess Match or Cosmic Chess Game, and it deals with the fact that this game has been going on since people began to orally translate the stories. I'm speaking specifically of Genesis. We go from the creation of man into the garden, and right there we see the conflict, this chess game. And it's been going on through millennia, and it's ramping up to its conclusion. We're watching the last stages of the match, and it's alarming. I think the times we are living in are absolutely alarming on one hand, and yet we know that Jesus tells us himself, when you see these things begin to happen, look up. Your redemption is coming. In other words, I'm coming back. The second, all this to say that the second coming, his return is imminent. And I digress a little bit. I don't want to get too long-winded here. We got lots of ground to cover. But the recent show on the Shroud of Turin, of course, I'm a believer. I'm opening up a can of worms here, but a little off topic perhaps. But what amazes me is that cloth has been sitting there for roughly 2,000 years. Since Jesus' burial. I believe it's the real deal. And interestingly enough, only in the last 6 months were they able to take the information on the shroud, which is a two-dimensional object, you know, this painting, and yet this three-dimensional information encoded within the shroud. And from that, they're able to not only show the horrific and very graphic forensic evidence of the scourging and the crucifixion itself, but they're able to show what this man looked like, that the shroud was over. And I just find that incredible how things like this are coming to light, just as all these other events and dynamics, which of course I link to prophecy, are coming to light. So none of this is by accident to me. I just think it's the return of the King is on the horizon.
Yes.
So, Len, we saw that documentary, too, on the way they extracted the 3D image from the cloth.
Uh-huh.
And it reminded me, as I was watching them do it, because I'm sure you probably understood, too, how they were able to generate a 3D image from a 2D print. But I was thinking, in essence, that burial shroud was sealed, the secret of it, until the time of the end.
Exactly. Well said, Stan. Well said.
We wept when we saw the picture. I mean, it just put such a personal touch, you know.
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah. When I saw the fabric of time, and one of the things that stood out to me was that since creation, the actual resurrection event, it was actually defined in this way. It was an event horizon, is the way they put it,
right.
On the par of the first creation. And it was the beginning of that which represents the new creation, and they referred to it as an event horizon. I was just shocked when I heard that. So
They did do that. It was a woman doctor, I think, a PhD, was talking
about it. Isabel Piksek, Dame Isabel
right.
Piksek.
That's right, yeah. Oh, look, I've been watching all this stuff too, guys. And great stuff, great stuff.
Yeah, and you know, as you're talking, and this is maybe getting a little bit ahead of where I wanted to go, but you know, I've been working with survivors of chronic ritual abuse who have been systematically programmed by Nazi doctors that were trained by Dr. Josef Mengele, Dr. John Bowlby. These people were hired and paid for by various members of the royal houses in Europe. And in none of this is there any alien phenomenon or UFO. It is this hardcore trauma-based mind control where they take a child at the earliest, at their beginning of their life, subject them to the most chronic trauma, split the person's identity, channel in spirits, where the principalities and powers actually create an internal structure that is designed to create a portal. In other words, an individual is so traumatized and so fragmented that the principalities and powers are able to take that individual and create them into a portal so that the enemy is able to project himself through them in such a way that it creates the kinds of conditions that we have in the time in which we live that can actually bring forth Nephilim. So we live in a very unique generation. I think since the birth of Israel in 1948, that actually set, that was the actual starting point that we could actually define the end of the end of the age with the birth of Israel all the way up to the coming of the Son of Man. And there's so many things, and I have one little piece, and we have so much to cover, but I just wanted to bring that in because I never even thought anything about the kinds of things you're talking about, Lynn or Stale, or Dan, or excuse me, Stan. I had no idea. I got Dan on there and I got Stan.
There you go.
But when I heard that the alien abduction, there's a common theme where there are, the hybrid development and the creation of these entities that are designed to be presented as aliens, and we know that there is a tremendous deception around this, and so all of this is coming together at such a rapid pace that it's hard to even know where to begin. But we'll just continue on with this. And what I would like to ask is perhaps George Ann, you did have something that you wanted to bring up in terms of question.
Yes.
And so maybe we could just bring those up now so that you're included in whatever the writers or the people are contacting you.
Okay. One of the questions was, when the babies are born, are they normal? Do they look like us? And is the duration of the gestation period around 4 months? That was... two questions there. Another question was, are they larger than normal babies? And are they like us? Do they look like us? The next question was, are they produced artificially through some kind of an insemination process? And basically, everybody just wanted to know how this works with bringing Nephilim babies onto the planet.
Yeah. And let me just interject here. When we say Nephilim, my understanding is that behind the alien phenomenon is a current final eruption of that which we see in Genesis 6 of Nephilim. But go ahead, guys.
Are we supposed to answer those questions?
Yeah.
Why don't you pick one and let us go at it one at a time?
Yeah.
Okay. Stan, why don't you start with how these babies are brought into our realm, our dimension. Are they normal? Is the gestation period normal, or is it around 4 months? Are they bigger than regular human babies?
I think perhaps Doug could answer that better than I could. I've been more on the technology and prophetic side of things rather than actually dealing with people that have had these.
Could I jump in on this, then?
Sure.
You bet.
Go ahead.
I'd love to. It's been my understanding, when I interviewed Dr. Jacobs for the book, The Alien Interviews, and I had read all of his books prior to the interview with him, and been following this particular breeding program, because in the Nephilim trilogy, I get into that in the first book and in other books. And the hybrids, the earlier hybrids could not pass. In other words, the typical scenario is a woman is abducted, and she finds herself on a metal table, and she's being probed and gynecological examinations, and other bizarre stuff is happening to her, and she is then put back into the house. Usually she has a memory loss, or the phenomena is somehow blocked out of her memory, and she finds herself pregnant, and she's not sure how she got pregnant. And usually in the first trimester, in the third month, she's then reabducted, the fetus is taken from her, and then she believes that she's miscarried. This happens over and over and over again through not only the people I've talked to, but certainly Dr. Jacobs, who has many more so-called alleged abductees, exactly the same scenario. And by the way, this guy is a secular historian. He has no theological axe to grind at all. And he believes that the breeding program is nefarious. Its ends are nefarious and is certainly not in the best interest of humans. This goes back, let's say, 40 years now. So the early hybrids, the woman would then be reabducted sometimes 3 or 4 or 5 years later and presented with this child, this hybrid child, which would look very sickly in the early days, long stringy hair, very dark, large, and large black eyes, and very sickly looking. Fast forward, the hybrids have become, through generations now, apparently they can pass. They can pass as human. And yet there are certain idiosyncrasies where when they manifest, and I just had a woman that, in fact, Doug, I sent you that testimony with her, but which was a very unnerving. She believed she had an encounter. And, you know, after interviewing countless people, you get a feel for that, whether someone's elaborating or stretching your story or pulling your leg, or the whole thing's a ruse. And I spoke to her 3 times on 3 different occasions, about a week apart, before I went with the story. And the thumbnail sketch, without getting long and involved into it, this man appeared in her store, and he had sort of golden skin. It almost looked like a bad tanning job. And this person was working in a very cold climate, where it was 20 degrees outside. They worked in a mall, so the store was inside a mall, and yet people in the mall would wear coats and the appropriate apparel for that time of year where this person was. Anyway, this entity walks in, short sleeve shirt, lightweight pants. Right away, there's a flag up.
Well, yeah.
And it comes over to where she is and begins to engage in a conversation. And this is the first thing out of its mouth. Because of recent events, and the Haiti earthquake had happened a week before, because of the recent events, I have decided to become mortal.
Oh.
And she said that this entity was about 3 to 4 feet away. She still can't tell me the color of its eyes. I said, what do you think they were? She said, I think they were black. She's not sure. She said it was like all the energy was being sucked out of the room. She felt she was a Christian. She felt the Lord tell her, don't talk to this man.
Yeah.
And so she didn't. She just kind of smiled and nodded her head. And then this entity proceeded to tell her, I have 27 Seiko watches that I need bands for. And at that point, she looks down on his arm, and where his wrist is this large, strange watch, unlike anything she'd ever seen before. And then her coworker came. She was interrupted for, like she said, like a second, a tenth of a second. She turned away. He was gone.
Oh.
Just like that. And she should have been able to see him with her vantage point into the mall. No way this guy could run 50 yards in 2 seconds. So those are some of the stories that come across my desk. I believe, like Dr. Jacobs believed through his research, that the breeding program has reached completion, that these entities now can pass and are being actually integrated into society. So
yeah.
Sounds a little like science fiction, and yet we know that Jesus tells us, as in the days of Noah, so it will be when the Son of Man returns. And in my opinion, what differentiates the days of Noah is the presence of the fallen angels cohabiting, having sex with the women. But like the Daniel passage that you're talking about, Stan, they will not cleave to them anymore. So that no more marriage. They just take and do what they want to do. That's exactly what we see echoed and mirrored in the abduction phenomena. There is no marriage. They're just breeding. They're breeding this this modern Nephilim hybrid, which looks and can pass as a human being.
And why are they doing that?
That's the $64,000
No, I think, and this is what I'm going to be covering, Stan, and as a follow-up to these to these interviews. we know that in Genesis chapter 3, verse 15, that the conflict between the seed of the woman and the seed of the serpent was announced by God in the garden. And so with the conflict already set in motion between that which is described as the seed of the woman in conflict with the seed of Satan, we see in Genesis 6 a countermove of Satan to corrupt the human gene pool so that the promise, the proto-evangel, as it's been called in Genesis 3:15, to corrupt the human gene pool so that the possibility of a coming redeemer would, of course, be negated. And if you corrupt the entire human race with this hybridization of the incursion of fallen angels and the daughters of men, Adam there in Genesis 6, then the promise would be rendered of God would be rendered null and void. So it was an attack upon the seed. We see later on when the children of Israel were called to go into the land of Canaan, that the seed of Abraham, as it was called, that the Numbers 13:33, the Nephilim were already there. Now, some say those Nephilim are not the same, but you can't prove that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've heard that so-called scholarly debate, and it's not convincing. It says the Nephilim were there. So according to a Bollinger, he said that was a second eruption, not as universal, but confined, and it was again to attack the seed of the woman now, through the descendants of Abraham, who were called to go in and dispossess their enemies in the land of Canaan, and they were told to wipe out the entire population. Why? Because of the Anakim, the Emim, the Zamzumim, the Horites, the Anakim, etc. All these various the Rephaim, these various offshoots of the Nephilim, and so again, it's attack on the seed. Now, what about today? And I think that's really important.
Yeah.
The seed of the woman, of course, culminates in Christ. Galatians 3:16. That seed is referred to as Christ there. So when Jesus came, that brings the conflict forward, and we see Satan to Herod the Great seeking to wipe out all the male line from 2 years old and younger in Bethlehem. Just to go after that seed. Now that Christ has been raised from the dead, what is his primary attack? It's against the church. But in Isaiah chapter 53, verse 10, it says that in resurrection, Jesus shall prolong his days. He shall see his seed and prolong his days. And in the context, that's right after his crucifixion. He shall see his seed and prolong his days. And so now the attack is upon the seed of Christ. And in the work that I have been involved with through these years is that everyone who is generational, ritually abused, that in this process, the demonization and the enmeshment with principalities and powers through trauma is at such a high level that, I'm talking about females now, that they are so structured because of their bloodline and because of the way in which the powers of darkness are able to create what has been called is a template, that they can actually cohabit and produce an alien offspring, a hybrid. And why are they doing this? Well, the body of Christ is just that, the body of Christ. And so if Satan can weaken the church, if he can corrupt the church, if he can find a way to so enmesh himself through what I've been working with for years, generational SRADID, that at the deepest level, even on a spiritual level, there is both a personal enmeshment with these principalities and powers, and then after these entities are born, they are actually bonded to these entities. I'm talking about trauma bonded, spiritually bonded, sexually bonded, and this creates a tremendous defilement in the body of Christ, And if the church is to come to the measure of the stature of the fullness of Christ, as we see in Ephesians 4:13, if the church is to complete its course, then the adversary is naturally going to focus all of his attack upon the body of Christ as much as he can. And then once the church, I believe, when the church is removed, he's going to focus all of his attention on Israel, as we see in Revelation chapter 12, that once Satan is cast out of heaven, he's going to go after the rest of her seed, that is the seed of the woman. So that's the way I see the overall scenario as to why the enemy is doing this.
Well said.
Yes. Well, a question for Stan. Now, you have an awful lot of knowledge, Stan, about physics, and you know, you've worked on propulsion systems and things. You have a very interesting background in your past, and with the technology, now here's something else. With the technology that they possess today, that's sort of, shall we say, underground, can they or can they not bring to pass, in the eyes of the world, as it were, almost every thing that's mentioned in the book of Revelation through technology?
Well, yeah, sure. The answer is yes. But the technology is something that's been developing here on Earth with Earth scientists for probably at least 50 years.
Yes.
Understand, if we got marooned on a planet with, cavemen, or at least, you know, King Arthur's time with just swords and that's it, and we knew all the technology we know, and we could live, you know, without dying anyway, but we could live over several generations, and we would want to build an infrastructure to allow us then to make weapons or instrumentation or miracles that we could produce to control or manipulate the population that we were dropped in on, or to preserve ourselves there.
Yeah.
And what has happened here is that when Satan and his angels are, in fact, are being cast down now, when they're being cast down to Earth, they were coming in waves, and without a lot of technology to support them, they were taken out of the environment where God is, put here on the Earth. So they needed to build infrastructure that they controlled to make miracles and control the population of Earth to the point where they could wipe out Israel and wipe out the Christians that are here during that time. And so the people of Earth, not just the United States, people from Australia that are working on the projects underground, literally underground, in West Germany underground, and a lot of the old bunkers left by the Nazis, in Saudi Arabia, about 120 miles out into the Ruf al Khali, the empty quarter near Riyadh, about 120 miles out from Riyadh, in Norway underground, in Canada, all these bases of Earthmen underground were trying to build technology, learn technology from the quote-unquote aliens, who are nothing more than the fallen ones, use that to get us anti-gravity and weapons and whatever. And foolishly, our human representatives thought that they could pull the wool over the eyes of Satan's troops and could learn enough technology to hold them off. And this is foolishly, I say, because the leaders of our underground operations and the secret government are not really what I would call born-again believers and followers of Jesus Christ. They are secular and Satanist in most cases. So in the late 70s, the majority of the underground bases, if not all of them, that mankind had built and put technology in, were overthrown by Satan's minions. Yeah, there were several terrible underground battles. I wasn't present in any of them, but I did hear reports of them. And at this point in time, then Satan and his minions had controlled the infrastructure they needed to build even greater infrastructure underground to do even greater, quote-unquote, miracles in the eyes of the people of Earth.
Yeah.
So, a deception needs to have tricks, And if Satan is fighting Jesus and he knows Jesus is coming back here to do him in, Satan is going to be probably trying to build weapons that work in the heavens where they live to fight Jesus. And this whole thing is, like Lynn said, it's like a chess game, but it's a chess war. I mean, use the word gambit.
Right.
It's a gambit by Satan to try to fool people in the last days. So I think that's why they're doing it. They're building army. They're building resistance and technology to fight the Messiah in that one last great battle that they will lose, obviously. But.
Yes, Stan, and this is so important. This is one of the main reasons why I wanted to interview you with Lynn, is if I understand what you are saying, is that there are, fallen angels we know are invisible, but they can manifest in various ways. I'm assuming that a fallen angel could manifest as a large spaceship. It could manifest as an alien. But also, if we have alongside of that, we have the hybridization and the final incursion of fallen angels producing actual physical offspring, Nephilim, who could actually pilot ships, I'm assuming. They have physical properties, whether they're the grays or reptilian, whatever they are, that they're physical entities, and they would also have actual physical hardware they could fly. So if you have the combination of the manifestation of the capacity of fallen angels to present themselves in all this variety of deception, from ancestral spirits to UFOs to aliens, plus actual physical entities that are being perceived to be aliens and actual hardware, that just ramps up the whole scenario of just how great the final end time deception upon mankind is going to be, in my mind. Do you have any comments on that?
Lynn?
Well, look, I think we're all basically in agreement. I certainly concur. It's all this. The enemy is, look, we know from Scripture that the mystery of iniquity is working. We know that from Paul. And that's sort of a fuzzy thing, secretness of lawlessness. And a lot of people have no clue as to what that is. In my opinion, he's ramping this thing up. He's ramping up his last stand, as it were, as in the days of Noah. The Nephilim, Stan, you asked me, what do I think is the purpose of the hybrids? He's raising an army. It's to use a modern analogy of Lord of the Rings, it's Sauron. I mean, I hate to use pop culture as an example, but it's great because most people see it. It's exactly what's going on. Breeding an army of orcs, that type of thing. When these hybrids, I believe the hybrids will interface with the rise of the satanic super soldiers that Russ talks about. It's all part of the same thing. Orcs and Arukai, to use the Lord of the Rings analogy. But he's raising up a demonic army. Remember, Jesus himself has the most dire warning in all of Scripture, in my opinion, when he says, unless those days were shortened, no flesh would survive. That to me is a horrific, horrific warning.
Oh, yes.
And so,
yes.
So what is coming on the earth? Men fainting from fear from what is coming on the earth? I believe we're on the cusp. I really do. I've never seen it this tenuous. Maybe it'll come up to the line and back off. I don't know. But it seems to me like this thing is getting ready to blow up. And I, no pun intended, at any moment. And the key player to watch for all the prophecy, in my opinion, is Russia. With the recent coup in Kyrgyzstan and now the decapitation of the head of state of Poland, which, if you follow the Ron Brown, this is way off base, I realize it, but the Ron Brown under the Clinton administration, where he was in the plane, and the whole, exactly the same thing. The plane, flew into the mountain, and that was it. Everybody lost their life. It's almost a mirror copy of what happened in the Clinton administration, and it got rid of Ron Brown. In my opinion, and there were several links from Polish diplomats today talking that this was not an accident. What is going on here? What is Russia positioning herself to do? And let me just wrap this up, because it's all connected. Obama snubbing Netanyahu is huge. Most Americans don't understand that, but in Middle East cultures, when you go out to, when you have a guest over like Netanyahu was at the White House, and you go to dinner and you leave him standing there, it's the highest insult, the highest of insults, and that sends a message to the Muslim community, Islam, the jihadists, Israel's neighbors, that you know what, we're not in bed with Israel anymore. Do as you want to do with them. Now you know you have to read a little bit into that, but it sends a signal. And I think the enemy grows bold. Putin is a godless man, has no idea of what he's into or what he's about to. Is this the hook in the jaw that we read about in Ezekiel 38? It very well could be. I believe, all that to say this, I believe that the political events will trigger supernatural events. In other words, if it's the Ezekiel 38 war, which manifests soon, let's say, when we see this Confederacy of Nations go up against the land of unwalled villages, i.e. Israel. And there's debate about that. Some of my critics go, well, they've got this huge wall. Yeah, they do. I admit that. But what the prophet is looking at, he's looking at the world through a lens that was 2,600 years old back then. And there was no such thing as a land of unwalled village. Tel Aviv isn't surrounded by walls. You know, Sarot isn't surrounded by walls. And on through Israel. Yes, there's this one wall, but the cities are not surrounded by walls like they were in the ancient times when Ezekiel wrote the prophecy. So that we can all equivocate and quibble over that and everything else. The bottom line is this. When, not if, this war happens, this Ezekiel 38 scenario happens, I believe it will trigger supernatural events. Because when we and walk through this with me just for a second. When we, the Luciferians, the Satanists, their currency is one of fear. The currency of the kingdom of heaven is one of faith. They are diametrically opposed with one another. And so Satan does everything. Look at the abduction phenomena. It creates fear, cattle mutilation, fear, human mutilation, great amounts of fear, fear and wonder. And that's what he moves in. That's the climate that he promulgates. That's the currency in his kingdom is fear. What would create the greatest collective fear on this planet than a nuclear event going off in the Middle East? And it's not like World War II, where we get nice, you know, sanitized film clips 2 weeks later in the matinee theater. It's live on the internet, on satellite TV. Everybody's linked up. The world is linked up together. We watch this thing in real time. That's when he manifests. That's when 3-mile-wide craft, 2-mile-wide craft appear over the cities and just sit there. And they will say, this is the alien gospel, this is the great deception, which I believe is coming on the earth. Satan comes with all signs and lying wonders. That the so-called extraterrestrial, which is really the fallen angels, will say that we, the aliens, created all life on this planet. We genetically manipulated early man to his present form. We started the world civilizations. They were worshipped, or E.T. was worshipped by our early ancestors as gods. We are now back. They started the world's religions, and now they are back at this critical time in human evolution to help us evolve into the next state. This will cause a great falling away. People will pour out of the churches and believe the lie. That's from what, you know, my research, that's what I've uncovered, and that's what I think is going to happen.
What does, Stan, can we ask you your opinion on that also? Stan?
I agree that the gambit that is being run by Satan is to fool the people of the earth. He's an immortal, as it were, and so are the angels that are siding with him. But they are going to let him pretend to be God. And that comes straight out of Daniel in the translation. It's an immortal pretending to be God.
Right.
And there's a lot more in there that I haven't had time to translate, but I now understand a little bit about how the book was coded, but one thing I think that is really important, I think Glenn would agree with me, is when the gambit is played out, when the false Messiah arrives with all signs and wonders and technology to help solve us, help solve our geophysical problems, our food problems, our disease problems, our war problems with nuclear war on the brink, all of the major finance, all the major problems that are scaring people to death, hitting them right where they live in the wallet at home, all these problems are going to be solved, or ostensibly solved, by the arrival of the Messiah, which is going to be preceded by bad aliens, which are the Greys and reptilians and whatever, hybrid, and they're going to be removed from the scene by, quote-unquote, the real Messiah, which is Satan pretending to be him.
Uh-huh.
So how do you know? It's important if you're here on the earth as a believer in Jesus. When that happens, how do you know what the real Messiah is versus the imposter. Who's coming? How do you know he's coming? And how do you pick the real one from the fake? Does anybody want to address that, or you want me to answer it?
Go for it.
Okay. Matthew 24, as Lynn was saying, very important book, very important chapter of the book. Then if any man, this is Matthew 24 and verses 23 to 27, if any man shall say unto you, lo, here is the Christ, or there, don't believe it. For there shall arise many false Christs and false prophets, and they shall show great signs and wonders, insomuch that if it were possible, they
yeah.
shall deceive the very elect. Behold, I have told you before, wherefore if they say unto you, behold, he is in the desert, don't go look. Behold, he's in secret chambers, don't go look. Don't
right.
believe it.
Right.
For as the lightning comes out of the east and shines even into the west, so also shall be the coming of the Son of Man. That means that if you have to go see him in this place or that place, and Daniel, it does tell about that, which I've written in the translation, he's going to hide in a hideaway, secret, that we just can't access. I don't know whether it's underwater or in solid earth or off the planet, but it talks about his secret chambers, his secret defensive chambers in Daniel. It's just incredible what is in there. So we must know that if they come and say, go to him there in this place in the desert, gather here and there, that it's not the real one. The real one will talk to you right where you are. You will see him anywhere you are on the planet at the same time.
Right.
So that is extremely important. In fact, I held the printing of the book up for 3 days to put that one last verse at the very end of the book. This is important.
Yes. Okay. Now, Stan, what I want to make sure that our listening people have clear in their minds is, do I understand from your research and your history that at some point the power elites, those that are the cabal of internationalists, the power elites, the oligarchy of plutocrats that are the ultra wealthy, and their goal is to bring in a new world order. Okay, at some point, as we see in Genesis, as we see in the Nazi regime, they begin to seek benefits and spiritual knowledge from the dark side, and to help them in their agenda. Well, in the exchange for those gifts from the dark side, these principalities and powers wanted women in order to build their end-time army. I'm not so sure they told the power elites why they wanted women, unless they posited that they're going to help mankind reach a higher evolutionary state, and that's why they wanted to have our women to produce hybrid offspring to help move a man further along in their evolutionary process, as per the New Age thinking of Helena Petrovna Blavatsky and Annie Besant and Alice Bailey, etc. Now, at some point, if I understand correctly, as they were gaining ability, technology to move forward their New World Order agenda, I'm talking about mankind, there is a certain point where with the alien, they call them alien, the hybrid offspring reached a point where they actually took the authority away from the power elites, and it's now more in the hands not only of Satan, but in those who are the hybrid replacements. So would it be correct to say, just by way of the parenthesis, the report I'm getting from survivors is that the top power elites are now subject to the hybrid offspring, the Nephilim. It wasn't always that way.
Wow.
There was a changeover somewhere. I don't know if it was in the 70s or 80s, but it's somewhere in there that the shift to power, there was a takeover, but that there actually is hardware that these hybrid creatures can fly as a part of that which will be the coming deception. Can you comment on that, Stan, in terms of actual hardware versus just some visionary apparition of a fallen angel versus real hardware and real hybrid creatures masquerading as aliens? Can you address that, please?
Sure. the rebellion or the overthrow of the Earth-based technologies underground began in about 1973, as far as I can determine, because in 1974, while I was at lunch with Sir John Williams and Sir Henry Somerset down in Melbourne, they were the control officers down in Australia for the Luminous, and we were having lunch, and Sir John was talking to Sir Henry. They're both old, old cotton tops, and Sir John is saying to Henry, he says, you know, Henry, waved out over my head out into the, you know, another piece of his hand. He said, they're moving in on us. They're moving in on us. Mm. And I tried to get him to explain it, and they obviously decided to go fishing or something and went to a very trivial conversation the rest of lunch and cut me out of it. But I'm pretty sure that's when he was talking about the satanic forces overthrowing them bit by bit, trying to move in on their territories. And we had bases, you know, as I said, in Saudi Arabia, in Australia, in Norway, the South Pole. There are just a number of places that had bases, and some of them you can't even get to by road. And so I know we had a lot of them and a lot of hardware out there, a lot of development, because that's what I was recruited to do, was to go work on one of the types of saucer propulsion. And in the technologies that I was exposed to there, anti-gravity was probably the most spectacular, because it allows them to fool the people of Earth in such a manner that the engineers and physicists will just drop their jaws and say, that's impossible. They got to be created by God. And I'm going to address that. I am addressing it in part two of a paper I've been writing. I've put part one up on the shopping cart there for people. I expect to pay if I'm going to do the research. But part two is dealing with the nature of gravity, the true nature of gravity. And I have bored the readers in the first part with formulas and equations to prove it mathematically point by point, and with tests they could do with batteries and wires in their home. And the next test is going to show that you can affect gravity, you can interact with gravity with electricity and wires. And when you understand this, then the objections, the disbelief of the physics community and the engineering community that you can have a ship a mile wide, a mile in diameter, just floating up there, hanging over a city, and then zip off.
Yeah.
The disbelief that that could possibly happen without ripping it apart from the inertial stresses is completely wiped out when one realizes that you can take a 30-foot diameter saucer craft with its own anti-gravity field, which is a spinning vortex. It's a complex vortex, but it is a vortex. It has, in essence, made gravity around itself pointing toward the center of its field and its belly. Mm-hmm. If you were to hook up 9 of these together and let their fields lock together, they'd be like a flock of geese in the Earth's gravitational field. They could move as one unit. They don't have inertial stresses. Like if you had a Boeing, you know, number 12,000 that was a half a mile long and it had girders running the length of the plane, they would fall apart from their own weight. The leverage on it would break the metal due to their reacting in the Earth's gravitational field.
Stan,
if you have bunch of small fields all linked together, then you can make a huge, huge craft perform wonders up there over cities and wow the people. And this is the one thing we've been very careful not to let loose much, because that would destroy the magic of how all-powerful these beings are.
What about cloaking? Can they be there and you not see them?
Yeah, there are several types of cloak. Certainly, if they're in the air up above, they can produce a false image on the bottom of their craft that bends or transmits light from the other side through, so that you don't see. And that way, that we can do that now ourselves in our own aircraft.
But, that was done in Phoenix a while back.
Phoenix Light, you mean?
Yeah, that craft that people.
Well, when I talked about a half mile in diameter or the craft, I was kind of in my mind thinking about that Phoenix Light thing.
Yes.
That was not flares on parachutes.
Yeah, no way.
No way.
No,
what's wrong with that? There's no point even discussing. It's just ridiculous.
Yeah, what's important is that, to me, is that if you can have mile wide craft that are actually physical structures that can perform in the manner and way in which you're describing. How long has that technology been in hand? And, of course, it's important, as you said, that they keep this very secret until the right time. But how long has that been available to those that are building these craft? And would you say that these underground bases are containing this hardware with the hybrids ready to occupy them whenever the time comes?
Well, I'm sure that they're strategically placed all around the world now. One thing that gives them great latitude of where they position these craft and some of the smaller scout craft is that you can take the molecular structure of them and start a vibration, a harmonic vibration, to, in essence, line up your atoms in a certain way, and you can pass through solid material without being ripped apart. And that's that way they can take their craft to a solid rocky mountain or down through the water into the base of the sea. They can park it anywhere they want. They can go right through. I mean, Jesus even presented that technology when he reappeared to the disciples as he was resurrected. He appeared right in the middle of them. The doors and windows were locked, and they were hiding. He just appeared in the room and then disappeared.
Yeah.
So you can get through these things with the proper technology. So,
yeah, go ahead. Well, I was just going to say, with the various dimensions that are within the physical universe, there's of course capacity or availability to the higher intelligences to access through portals or through whatever type of gates there may be to utilize these higher dimensions to either appear or disappear, I would think.
Oh, absolutely. And there are at least 3 and possibly 7 levels of existence mentioned in the scriptures. Third heaven, you know, and up to the heaven where God dwells, and those below him in the hierarchy. And I, instead of calling it a parallel universe or parallel universes, I tend to call it concentric universes, which are all around the same points of gravity. You know, like there are levels to existence around the Earth's gravitational field. And that's why we have the princes and principalities of the air. We've got people in the surface. We've got people in the bottomless pit, which is a sphere inside the planet, and possibly phase-shifted because of the concentric universe business. But each level of existence that does exist, coexist around us here, has different energy densities on the atoms. And that's why when, in the Old Testament, Ezekiel came through, when God appeared to Moses, there was fire and rumblings and smoke, because from the higher energy density levels, as they gate into or port, as you wish, into our level, great amounts of energy have to be thrown off of their atoms, you know, the craft and themselves, to normalize them to this energy density where we are. I'm pretty sure this is what ghosts and spirits that are come into rooms and afflict people or, you know, bother them, make the room cool because they're coming from a lower energy density below us, trying to port through that. And as such, they're sucking energy out of our level because they're such low density.
Dimension.
Okay.
Dimension. Yeah. Well, now, so you're confirming that there's not only fallen angels that can, of course, masquerade and present in all kinds of physical visible phenomena, but we also, in association with that, we actually have physical hardware with real entities that can fly them at present. Is that a correct assumption?
Absolutely.
Okay. Well, here's what I want to read, and then Lynn, you can comment on it, and Stan, Dale, if you're certainly welcome to. This is a paper I sent you today. It's called Meta Tauta, After These Things. It was written by dear friend Sue Bradley, a tremendous researcher. In talking about the coming deception, etc., like the things we've been talking about tonight, she says this, quote, "It is through mercy alone that most of the world's population has spared direct interaction with the many species of giants currently existing within and upon the surface of the planet. With the convergence of multiple prophetic catalysts, this era of oblivious bliss may be coming to a terrifying and hideous end. Accounts from Solomon Islands describe how the residents have for centuries lived with these creatures among them, with reports of active subsurface UFO events." And then she quotes, "The first discovery is about how people of the Solomon Islands have shared their islands with previously undiscovered to the modern world race of of hominoids for millennia right to this present day, and for a variety of reasons explained, this has not been known about by the rest of the world until now. The second discovery is about the whereabouts of hidden UFO bases that I found existing in the Solomon Islands for quite possibly the same amount of time, and how there seems to be a link between the giants and the extraterrestrials making the Solomon Islands their home, unquote. That's just one point of reference in her particular presentation. Does that seem to line up with things that you have researched and know about, Stan and Lynn?
You want to take us, Stan? You want me to go, or?
Yeah, go ahead.
Sure. You know, that's mostly who tipped that off is Steve Quayle. And, you know, I've never been to the Solomon Islands, so I don't know. So I got to look at the story, you know, not that it's a spurious story. I'm not saying that. It may all be true. I would love to go there with a team and really try to do some investigation, you know, boots on the ground type thing of what's really going on over there. I will say this, that we know, and this is, you'll find this interesting, in World War II, Hitler sent, you know, Raiders of the Lost Ark was certainly a good example. As Hitler sent out teams of archaeologists to try to find different objects, Spear of Destiny, the Ark of the Covenant. But he also sent a team of people up into Tibet, and at one point had, at the close of the war, had about 3,000 Tibetan monks in Berlin. That in itself is bizarre. And of course, most people don't understand the significance of that. The ascended masters that Hitler supposedly dealt with, and this is the whole purpose of the 3,000 Tibetans, they were trying to usher in this Antichrist figure. They believe that in the whole Hollow Earth underground base. So it's like, well, it's not like Journey to the Center of the Earth, you know, Jules Verne's, where it's like this, but we're not sure what it is. But I do believe that there are underground bases, absolutely. And there are probably tunnels that crisscross this planet. I have no problem with that. And, you know, so to say that there's a base in the Solomon Islands is just like me pointing to what I've gleaned and known about what the monks say, but there's this whole underground world underneath. We also get this from the Hopi Indians talking about how they surfaced and their deity Malsaw. That they saw. So this is, it keeps cropping up all over the world. And after you hear these things, is it nice, friendly mythos, or is it, you know, legend, or is there something more to it? And of course, I believe that there's definitely something more to it. As Stan was talking about, the underground bases have been taken over. In my Nephilim trilogy, I write extensively about underground bases. In the third book, there's this whole tunnel system that's happening, and the tunnels are being created underneath New York City. And one of the final scenes is the protagonist, Art McKenzie, is there, and he's under this huge underground base, and he sees this literally flotilla of UFOs. I mean, like hundreds and hundreds of them as they're getting ready to go out. And deceive the nations, and that's the end of the third book. So I'm down with it. I would love and wish that we had resources to go to some of these places, with, you know, camera crews and, you know, 20 or 30 people. So there's not just two or three people that can get bushwhacked and killed and you never see them again, you know,
yeah.
Go in force with backing and, you know, but some of this stuff, and I'll end with this, some of this stuff is almost impossible to track down, and when you start sticking your nose in it, you get threatened. You know, you
yes.
get threats on your life. So it's
right.
Very strange stuff. High
yeah.
strangeness, as Lynn Moutenhall would say.
All right. Now, if you stand back and look at the big picture here.
Stan, can you talk more into the phone?
Yeah, I'm having trouble hearing you.
Yeah.
Well, is that better?
Yes.
That's about the best I can get it.
Okay.
If you look at the big picture here of Satan wanting to impress the locals here and let them and make them submit to him because he has all the answers for them, you know, not because he's trying to hurt them or anything, ostensibly, but just like Hitler did, he gave employment to people, he gave them medical care, you know, got rid of the youth on the street and did everything wunderbar. Now, Hitler had power. He had stormtroopers. He had SS. He had technology they were developing, and he could kind of influence the people he was in control of with that overbearing technology and army. If you run into the woods and you see a bear, you don't want to just hunker down. You tend to want to be taller than that bear. You'll raise up and go, you know, I'm bigger than you, because the biggest one scares the other one away. Now, imagine Earth as 97 nations, all with different cultures, all with different laws, all with varying religious groups within them, all in varying stages of income and, you know, richness or poorness or whatever. Now, they're all fighting with each other in a, quote-unquote, United Nations, trying to make a one-world peaceful government and all that kind of stuff, and it's not working. It will never work when you try to democratically solve it with such divergent cultures and religions.
Right.
However, if something bigger than anything we could do, and we could make flying saucers, people believe we can make little flying saucers in the back room, but if you make a big flotilla of mile-wide craft cars with guys that are 12 to 15 feet tall on them, this is going to impress.
Yeah.
This is going to make people in those 197 nations say, oh, wow, maybe we better see what they got to say. I mean, you know, if they say get together, we better do it, or they could destroy us.
Yeah.
Who could be like these people?
Yeah.
The biggest winning. I mean, it's just...
I want to jump in and add to something what Stan just said. You know, Stan, I've looked at your work, and I'm sure you might have glanced at mine or whatever. The bottom line is, you know, this is the first time you and I have ever really had a discussion, and we're looking at the phenomena and coming up with exactly the same scenario. I call that the coming great deception of a Luciferian endgame. That is exactly what I believe will come upon the earth and will change this paradigm shift. And let me just say this, that we know from the book of Revelation, you know, we know that it's going to be a one-world government, one-world religious system. And all these prophecy guys with their charts and all this stuff get up and tell us this. Fine, we get it. We understand this. But they never, ever offer how we're going to get there. And the problem is that, you know, it's staring at them right in front of their faces, but most people within the church don't want to look at what's manifesting. And, of course, exactly like you said, how do you get 1.6 billion Muslims and 2.1 billion Christians to somehow change their paradigm, their worldview? You start sailing mile-wide, two-mile, three-mile-wide craft around this planet, and all bets are off. It's overwhelming. Look, let me close with this. I interviewed Ricky Sorrell, Stephen the Lights. He's one of the key witnesses. He was out deer hunting, and minding his own business, didn't believe in UFOs at all, okay? And I interviewed this guy between 6 and 12 times over a period of 2 or 3 months. He came on the record in my alien interview book. And he said he was out deer hunting. He gets caught up in the brambles. As he's working himself loose, he looks up, and directly over the treetops, there's this craft which is about a mile wide. He could not see the edge of this thing. His word, I said, how did you feel? What were your thoughts? And he said, it was overwhelming. It was overwhelming. I sent him my book, Politics, Prophecy, and the Supernatural. He was, like, months afterwards, and talking to him, he was still wrestling with it, wrestling with what he saw, how it fit in with his, he's a Christian, how it fit in with his belief system. And see, when it happens, it's over. When the pastor tries to stand up on a Sunday morning and say that this is deception and this is the Nephilim and all this stuff, even if he knows that it is, it's over at that point. Because people are going to say, well, if you knew this, why didn't you tell us this before?
Right.
And if they have holographic film, and Stan, you can maybe speak to this, you know, in my talking with abductees for the last, you know, 20 years or whatever, I keep hearing this story, and it's an apocryphal story, and it's very colorful in the sense that these abductees talk about sometimes seeing holographic film of either future events or cataclysmic events, or sometimes the crucifixion of Christ and his resurrection being orchestrated by E.T. There's one author, Barry Downing Jr., who's written the book, and I quote him in my book, Politics, Prophecy, and the Supernatural, because he's actually promulgating what I call the Great Deception or the Alien Gospel. He believes that all the miracles of the Old and New Testament were created by E.T. That's what he believes.
Well, yeah. And really, when they say E.T., they're meaning from other planets or worlds. Or
exactly, exactly.
They're not addressing the fact that the technology was there, is there, that God created right around us. And if he uses a flock of birds to do it or a tornado that sits over the top of Israel by day and by night with fire, it doesn't matter how it's produced.
Right.
He's producing it. And to call him an E.T. is downgrading. It's rude. It's downright nasty, you know, because he is the creator, the sustainer of all this that is.
Right.
Look, when I started researching this upgrade to Cosmic Conspiracy in January, I really didn't want to do it again. I've been living with that book for, you know, 30 years, and then I realized I have to tell people about the deception of the technology once again, very specifically, because if they don't know this before it appears, it will look like sour grapes if I try to publish it or anybody after the fact.
But right, exactly.
We have to do it beforehand, and then
right.
I have such an urgency I can't tell you.
And, you know, Stan, let me jump in if I can. My sense of urgency has doubled since the first of the year like yours, where it's like the name of my radio show is called Acceleration Radio, and it's not a plug for the show. I mean, I want you to listen to it, but the bottom line is I really truly believe that this thing is like a runaway freight train and is accelerating. And as I monitor the news, you know, just as we talked about just before we came on, the 6.9 earthquake in China, the Iranians saying that, I don't know if you guys heard this or not, the Iranians are saying that if Israel attacks or uses nukes on Iran, they will activate the sleeper cells in the United States and detonate nuclear devices which are already embedded in our cities.
Yeah, Holly put that up this evening, too, on the news.
Debka file today. Hillary Clinton Monday saying that the terrorists want to get... I mean, it's all there. And yet the church still, you know, still won't address what's really happening. It's maddening. And so as watchmen, at least we're, you know, I'm on any program I can get. I blog about it constantly. I talk about it constantly. You know, all we can do is try to get the word out a priori, because after the fact, it's over. The great deception has just taken place.
Yeah.
So we'll see.
Well, our books, Lynn, I think what we've written and talked about, you and I and some others, that at least they're in hard print and stuck all over the world in places. I mean,
uh-huh.
You know, where you can't wipe them out. But the Internet, we're going to lose control of that if we ever had it. And you won't be able to put stuff out over the Internet to people, you know, about what we're talking about, because it won't be available to you.
Yeah.
That's why printed material or feed, but printed material most likely, because it doesn't require power to read it, are going to be very important. And if we can't convince them beforehand, those people need to know about what's coming, then at least during the time, if they are left behind and are part of that group that are on the earth at that time, they at least have the solace of knowing, okay, this is how we can tell the good guy from the bad guy.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
Yeah.
It's going to get more obvious as he gets more power. But, yeah, I'll tell you what, I'm not saying that Obama is the Antichrist, but I'm telling you he is such a narcissistic, evil, lying person that if he's not, he's high up on the team somewhere.
Yeah,
I agree, yes.
I think we all do, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Georgianne, what's our time frame? So we have some more to go, guys. Can we do some more?
Yes, yes. You've got.
So how are we on our time, Georgianne?
An hour and 13 minutes. We can do an hour and 30 minutes.
Okay.
Yeah.
I just want to follow up on, you know, what we just talked about thus far, and that is you talked about an underground bases. In my work with the survivors through the years, you know, I don't get caught up with the anecdotal story. My desire is to help them work through their traumatic experiences and their fragmented identity, to go through the process necessary for them to reconnect with their lost, stolen self, basically through trauma, and to see them come to wholeness. But in the process of working through the traumatic history of survivors of generational satanic ritual abuse, there has not only been individual stories that have come forward, but there's been a collective, cooperative testimony. And that is that there are these underground bases all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
There are tunnels that they have high-speed drilling devices.
Mm-hmm.
Back in the early 50s, they could drill 10 miles a day. That was in the early 50s. They have nuclear-powered underground tunnel drilling mechanisms that can go much more than that in one day. So the report is that there are these underground tunnels. They're like vacuum sealed. They're on a magnetic transport. They can, when you take the oxygen out, you can go faster than a jet, and you can go to all these different places where they're interconnected all over the world. And this may sound preposterous to people, but if you understand the technology to drill these underground tunnels, then you know you just have to do your research. But here's what's been reported. For example, I was working with one person who was a biological daughter of Prince Philip in England. And her mother was Helena Marie Bauer Rothschild of France, who was married to Baron Guy de Rothschild. If you saw a picture of her, you'd see the physiognomy, and you could see that she's obviously who she says is. But she lived in Las Vegas at the time, and she was highly structured in terms of her internal programming and her internal structure. And she mentioned that in Caesar's Palace that she was there was a throne there. Satan, of course, can only be at one place at one time. And whenever he would be in that particular part of the world, if you've ever been to Las Vegas, it's just like a modern-day Babylon, all the occult structures. I've been up at the top presidential suite of the Luxor and all these different places, all occultic. But in the Caesar's Palace, she would go. She said she'd go down 13 floors, and there was a representation of Satan's throne there. And whenever she would sit there, Satan could manifest through her to dignitaries and channel power, et cetera, et cetera. This is what they do. She mentioned to me that she remembers as a little girl being taken down to that lower level under Caesar's Palace, and she was put inside a transport device, and she went from Caesar's Palace to Area 51 in less than 10 minutes.
Hmm.
By car, it's over an hour and a half drive. And here's what she told me. This was years ago. I didn't even think about it at the time because I'm just working with her, trying to help her get through this, through the traumatic issues. So she gets to the Area 51, but here's what she said. And she's talking to me in a young child state, and she says, "Now, Mr. Doug," she said, "you know, people hear about Area 51 where they're doing all the building of the, you know, the various top secret craft and all that. But," she says, "very few people know about Area 52. I said, "What do you mean Area 52? And then she put her finger over her mouth and kind of like whispered, and she says, "That's the Nephilim Project."
Wow.
And she says, "Nobody above even knows this there." And now working with a young woman from Canada, she has reported that there are facilities like this all over the world where she was taken. She even reports there's one under the White House. There is a lab where they're not only working with hybridization that is the result of the union between fallen angels and women. And of course, here's the unique piece, and this is just a parenthesis. In the days of Noah, it may have been Shemadza and Azazel and the others, but in our day, the report is it's Satan himself. So he's going all out. But there's also a hybridization of insects, hybridization of animals.
Mm-hmm.
They're doing all this to create what I believe is that which will be a part of the plagues of the Book of Revelation.
Absolutely, absolutely.
So these testimonies have come from different people from different parts of the United States and around the world that I've been working with for over 25 years now. And so the collective, cooperative testimony of these people, it is not visionary. They've been physically abducted and taken to these places, even since this young lady who has been here with us from Canada. While she's been here, and it's sophisticated how they can get them out the door, but she's been physically taken to these different places where they reprogram her, and they're trying to maintain the investment that they made in her, and that is that she was created to be a template in order for the fallen angels to produce offspring through her as a non-bloodline, so that as of 2002, for the first time since Genesis 6, she reports that they now can choose women as whoever they chose. Where before 2002, it had to be royal bloodline. And so things have ramped up significantly. And all I can say is on a spiritual level that we've been working with here in that year that she's been here, my wife has been seriously sick and injured on a number of occasions.
Yeah.
When we got to a part in her called the curse or the abomination of desolation, this was structured into her. When that was removed, my wife immediately started getting better.
Wow.
So this is, I'm not dealing with alien abduction. I'm just dealing with satanic ritual abuse, which is very similar to what Russ Dizdar has been working with through the years.
Right.
Russ believes very clearly that spirit union with the human being will produce, no different in Genesis 6, will produce the same thing today as what happened in Genesis 6. The
That's
only
right.
difference, and this is the difference, what women are reporting today, it's not just any fallen angel, but Satan himself is personally involved, which tells me he knows what's going to happen, but he has no other choice because this is it. We're at the end. It's all or nothing. He is all out. Prepare his army for the final confrontation, Revelation 19:19, when he is going to wage war against the Lamb when he descends from heaven with his armies. So that's a very rapid overview of the years that I've been working with and with these people, and it has nothing to do with alien abduction or spacecraft.
Right.
But what's common is that at the very core and the deepest level of their memories, and it's very hard to get there. I mean, it's highly shielded and protected. At the very deepest level, when we get there, they have been taken to Mount Hermon and structured right there in that vicinity. Apparently, that portal when the angels of Genesis 6 descended to Mount Hermon, that is the strongest opening in stone existence. These women who are Nephilim mothers are taken there, and the actual conception event occurs in that highest peak on Mount Hermon. And so perhaps this would be a good place to close this part of our interview, unless, Georgianne, we have more time.
Well, yeah, go ahead, about 10 more minutes, and then we can go move to a part two if you gentlemen
yes.
would like to do that.
Well, I would like to do part two because they're in the community of those who are working in the area of the alien abduction phenomenon and the UFO reports. There is a somewhat of a division, and that is how do you perceive this phenomenon? And there's a group of I think well-meaning believers, and they are certainly servants of the Lord, so they're not our enemies. But it's very restricted in terms of how they perceive the whole alien abduction phenomenon,
mm-hmm.
and that is that this is all that you see occurring in terms of that which is the reported alien abduction, including the hybrid program,
right.
is just a ruse. It's just a perception
right.
based upon the manifestation of fallen angels. Well, I'm going to tell you something, guys. That does not fit. The whole scenario and the background of the women that I'm working with, because they are witnesses of what happened in terms of actually being abducted. There's corroborative testimony of where they've been physically, and so I think at some point we all want to go over some of these statements that have been made so that you can comment on that which represents the actual, if I can use the term, physical reality of what is going on, along with the whole manifestation of that which we would call the supernatural apparitions or the visionary aspects
sure.
produced by fallen angels, etc. Any comments in the remaining time we
yeah,
have on
just,
this?
Just real quickly, it's not either or; it's both and. I mean,
there you go. That's the point.
Yeah, and that's what people need to understand. That it's like. It's all signs and lying wonders. Some things can be not only use the word hallucination. Some images can be put in the person's mind. But look, there's definitely nuts and bolts hardware. I know Stan and I completely concur on this. We've got in my interview in the book, The Alien Interviews, when I interviewed Dr. Roger Lear. Look, he's taken 17 of these things out of people. It's not some sort of hallucination or
you mean you're talking about implants now.
Implants, alien implants, 17 implants out of people, and it's nanotechnology, and the alloy is unlike anything they've ever seen. I mean, he's had these things analyzed. I mean, it's when you watch his presentation, it is absolutely mind-blowing. And yet, you know, this isn't good enough. In other words, he's got hard physical evidence that something is really manifesting underneath. Real quick story. One of the implants, he told me, this is true, right from the horse's mouth. There was an implant in this woman's arm, and as he would approach it, right, with his finger, the implant would travel away from his finger 2 inches. You could see it underneath the arm move. Now, I'm not making this stuff up. This is right from Dr. Roger Lehrer. He experienced this, and then he removed the implant. What he found out is the circulatory system wraps itself around the implant, and the implant is powered by the person's circulatory system. How about that? Because the body, any type of a foreign object, the body would immediately seek to remove it or expunge it from itself. Not so with the implant. The cells and the blood vessels wrap around it, and this implant, this nanotechnology, draws its power from the person's own circulatory system. So it's like, with all due respect to those on the other side of the aisle, so to speak, who have a different explanation or a different view, a different paradigm of this, I think they need to do some more homework. And then, of course, we get Dr. Jesse Marcel, who actually, I've interviewed him also, who handled records from the 1947 Roswell crash. His family was ridiculed for 60 years. I mean, literally. Constant ridicule. You know, his father was made to look like a jerk. In the wake of the Roswell, it was a UFO. No, it was just a weather balloon.
Yeah,
right. How could Jesse Marcel Sr. mistake a weather balloon for the wreckage of a flying craft? So it's like, you know, there's a real disparity between, you know, my view, Stan's view, and the other side of the aisle that this is all somehow a great illusion. It's not just an illusion. There are nuts and bolt craft. There are physical hybrids which are manifesting, and you have to embrace both in order to really understand what is going on the planet.
Yeah, and I'll just follow up on the implants. I was working with a survivor here a while back, and she showed me on her arm this large lump. Actually, it was on the inside of her wrist, and I said, "What is that?" She says, "It's an implant. I have more. That's one." I said, "What is it there for? If I get into certain areas of my counseling, then it's activated and it shuts me down, okay?
Wow.
And I don't know exactly how it works, but there is something that connects with that implant and a communication that is going on in the supernatural or in the natural. I'm not fully sure." But when she went to the doctor to have it removed, the doctor didn't really know exactly. He had never done this before. He went in there to start to do the surgery. He says, "I cannot remove this because the nerves and everything are so enmeshed with it.
Exactly.
I don't know how to remove it.
Exactly.
I don't know how to remove it." And so she finally was able to find someone to remove it. And when she removed it, the doctor, of course, had never seen anything like it. Didn't even know what it was. But it was a very painful procedure. But the nerves and everything was so enmeshed with it that he had never seen anything like it before. And of course, this particular individual was very relieved to have it removed. But it took more than one attempt to get a doctor to even touch it because they'd never seen it before. Now, this is a survivor of satanic ritual abuse. This is not an alien abductee.
Right.
This
right.
is someone who was a member of the royal family, and this was put in her to keep her in control so that during counseling, if you reach a certain place where you're going to take down some construct in her DID structure, that thing would be activated and shut her down in the middle of the counseling process.
Wow.
Oh, that's pretty pretty spooky.
It's diabolically clever and,
yes.
and so nefarious and malicious and malevolent and evil. I mean, it just is. It's the work of the fallen one. All
well,
of it.
Are you gentlemen game for part two?
Not tonight.
Okay.
Not tonight.
Okay. Well.
Well. Okay. How are we doing on time?
You're almost at the bottom of the hour.
Okay. Well, Stan, go ahead.
I want to add something on the tunnel drilling that we've already passed over. I've got photographs here that are published photographs of a 46-foot diameter tunnel boring machine in Germany. Okay, and this is not new. I mean, I've got the the operational manual or whatever. And my uncle, in fact, both of my uncles, one of them's now dead, were electricians that helped wire atomic bombs in the Nevada area and California area. And they went into these tunnels. So I do know the tunnels exist. And we've had the ability to drill tunnels like this that are 20 foot in diameter for several decades, many decades.
Yeah,
that's what I've read.
And just to put it in perspective, go out and look the next time you're out in town, look at a four-story building. Look up four stories and imagine that is the tunnel. So was it you, Doug, who was talking about traveling through these at high speed, or was it Lynn?
Yeah, I was mentioning that,
Okay. Basically both of us, right?
Yeah, well, 46 feet in diameter for crying out loud, even 20 feet, now for two stories you could do it, but you could fly in these things if they're four stories, you know, in diameter.
Yeah.
They're huge.
I have a question for you, too, Stan. I didn't mean to interrupt, but with these tunnels and all the networking under the surface of the Earth, if the Earth's crust moves a lot, wouldn't those tunnels and those that are down in those deep underground cities, wouldn't they be trapped down there?
They might have problems. Especially if they were traveling at the time, they might close down on them. But yeah, that's always a problem. Yeah.
Okay.
These machines are so big that some of them, like instead of drilling sideways, they drill at an angle down and then across gently, or they have to take them apart and stand them up vertically and put them back together again. Because if they try to turn them over while they're complete, the weight of the iron and steel in it makes them bend and bind up. They will deform from their own weight. They're so big.
Yeah.
So, you know,
Stan, I just want to I know we're running, getting at the end of the time here, but in terms of size of a craft and potential weight of a craft, is there anything in terms of the physics of actually engineering and building one of these machines that would limit the size and the weight of one of these crafts that would be in, described as mile wide, 2 mile, 3 mile wide in dimension?
There would be a practical limit because of the weight and the size, because of the effect it would have on the surface of the Earth right underneath it, because it has to have such a tremendously strong gravitational field for itself, the craft.
Okay.
If it got too close, it could even trigger earthquakes. That's kind of why you don't go in Star Trek, where you don't hit warp drive within the solar system. You can avoid it because the shockwaves kind of hit the planet thing.
Where do they store these craft?
Oh, well, they can be stored underwater.
Absolutely. Underwater is my first choice also.
I think, we'll see them come out. Come out. They'll just appear, and they would have been hiding in the oceans and just...
Yep.
Up they come, and suddenly they're here, and the lie can then just be made that, oh, we've been here for a long time, or we just poured it in from, you know, out there somewhere. All these TV shows are bending people's mind toward accepting that.
Isn't there something in the scriptures where it says that a beast rises out of the ocean or out of the sea?
Yeah, Revelation 13:1. Yeah.
Interesting.
So in terms of these particular, this actual real hardware, it's there's no way to know probably how many there are, but in terms of those so-called aliens that are flying them, is there any other option before us other than these are the result of the current hybridization, the incursion of fallen angels producing Nephilim to actually fly these particular craft?
I don't know if the angelic beings can be solid in our world. I know you say they're like spirit beings and things, but if it's going to be like it was in the days of Noah, they're going to have to be physical here to do what they're doing.
Right.
With our women. So, where are they from? I don't know.
Well, that's what I'm saying, is that the reports that I have and the people that have actually reported these sexual union with fallen angels, that they're actual physical entities, that they are being produced, and if this is a segment or a portion of that which represents the alien phenomenon, then it would seem to me that these would be the ideal entities to bring in the deception, especially if they're actually flying the craft or a part of the actual experimentation.
Sure.
What, do you have any thoughts on that, Stan or Lynn?
Lynn, did you have a thought on that?
Excuse me. I completely concur. I think, as I said earlier, this is the great deception. This is the coming great deception. And the Luciferian Endgame, the subtitle of the book, Politics, Prophecy, and the Supernatural. But there's a whole chapter on that. It is the endgame. It is the Luciferian Endgame. It's the manifestation of the mystery of iniquity, which has been at work for almost two millennia. And when he finally tips his hand and reveals this thing, it will cause the great falling away. Millions, billions of people will abandon their existing paradigm, and this will usher in the one world religion. And if the Christians are still here, that is the faith, like all of us talking on the show tonight, we will be looked at as Neanderthals.
Yeah.
We will be regarded as absolute idiots for believing in Jesus at this point, if we're still here.
If we're still here, that's the big hit.
Yeah. Do you have any concluding thoughts, Dan?
Well, just a question to you and Lynn. Who do you define the elect as, spoken of in Matthew there?
Good question.
That's a big one. Well,
good question.
If you're asking me, I don't know if you want to. Let me just say this, that there's going to be a follow-up program, Stan. And Dan has been listening, and, you know, as a member, he's a descendant of King George VI, and he has a lot of very precious things that he will be sharing. So I would encourage you to follow up and hear Dan as one of the members of the royal family that has come out of this background. But my understanding is the elect there, Matthew 24 is the return of the Son of Man. That's a second Advent passage.
Uh-huh.
There's nothing in Matthew 24 that refers to the rapture. Those who are in the field, some will be taken, some will be left. What is it like the days of Noah? Who were taken in the days of Noah? The wicked. Who were left? Noah and his family. So the whole scenario in Matthew 24 is just the reverse of the rapture. And so the elect there, my understanding in terms of biblical hermeneutics, will refer to those in the tribulation, the Israel and the nation, those who are become believers in the tribulation that are going to be subjected to the worst time in all of history. Now, the question we should ask at some point, why would members of the church age be at the last generation be subjected to the worst time in all of history when all previous generations of the church age were not subjected to that? So I see the Matthew 24 is a second Advent passage, whereas the rapture of the church was a revelation of a part of the mystery doctrine that Jesus Christ gave Paul. It's a part of the mystery, 1 Corinthians 15. It's a separate a scenario when it comes to church age believers, and that's my take on it.
Well, it might well be, but the thing still bothers me is who are the elect in that period?
Well, they would be believing Jews and those Gentiles that come to Christ in the tribulation is what my understanding.
And why would it be not possible for them to be deceived?
Well, it says if it were possible. In other words, it doesn't say they will be, but I think the intent and the deception is so great that if those days were not shortened and there was not the intervention of the Lord, the assumption is they would be deceived. Because four times he says that the main sign of the end of the age, four times he says, do not be deceived, do not be deceived. Behold, I told you all things in advance. So the biggest sign as it relates to the end times is deception. So I think when he says, if it were possible, the condition in the Greek, there are four different ways of saying if, and I'll look that up and make sure I understand this particular nuance, but it doesn't say that they will. We know from biblical revelation in terms of the surviving remnant of Jews, when Jesus returns at the second advent, there will be an elect that will be there to receive Jesus when he returns from heaven with his bride.
Right, that's true. I just was wanting to see what you thought about it. It's going to be interesting to see. I guess maybe the Holy Spirit will indwell them, or not indwell them, but I don't know. At that time, the Holy Spirit's off the earth. So I don't know how they would be protected, particularly from being deceived by this, unless it's by the word of knowledge of the teachings that we're talking about now.
Well, if you look at the 144,000 who will be sealed, they are supernaturally protected, and I think that there will be, we see a remnant described throughout the Old Testament prophecies, Isaiah 59, throughout the book of Zechariah and Micah, that if you look at the end of Zephaniah, in fact, I could be happy to send you a wonderful scholarly article on the remnant that will be alive when Jesus Christ returns.
I'd like to look at that too.
Yeah, the remnant theology is very important because it is a godly remnant that will be alive and survive when Jesus returns. Now, when we come back to the church, and this is the really important piece, that great falling away, I believe, will occur during the church period. It actually overlaps leading up to the revelation of the man of sin. And so when you look at First Timothy chapter 4 about the doctrine of demons that people will be paying attention to, the last days, perilous times will be setting in, Second Timothy chapter 3, we see Second Peter 2 and the entire book of Jude, the general trend as we approach the coming of the Lord for the church is massive deception.
Mm-hmm.
So there is an overlap there, and I think there are plenty of passages that warn Christians as to the time where we're living, and it's just only going to increase. And I would like to say that, Lynn, when you started out, that the church is so asleep in the West,
mm-hmm.
I can't speak for the whole church, but wherever I have been, it's like there is a veil.
I agree. It's
when I talk about satanic ritual abuse and infiltration of the church, which Russ Dizdar has done such an excellent job of infiltration, when you bring that to light, we've been asked to leave. It's like we're fruitcakes or we're cult leaders.
Yeah.
I'm considered a cult leader because we point out the fact that there is cult infiltration in the churches, and they're saying we're just there to divide and cause trouble, and we're asked to leave. And yet, it's there. The cult. There's satanic infiltration throughout the church, the body of Christ. That's what we have witnessed.
It's the blind leading the blind, and they don't want to deal with reality, which is why I believe the church is in a perfect position, allowed to see in church.
Absolutely.
Perfect position for the deception. The enemy has done a marvelous job in the last 40, 50 years, and the time is ripe. Is ripe.
It's been incremental, the way I see it. But I don't know if that addressed what you were asking, Stan.
Yeah, it is. It did, and I feel like both of you that the acceleration curve is exponential. It is.
Yes,
I agree. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Let's schedule part two, and we'll do it.
Okay.
All right. Well, we'll work that out, and we'll get back.
Yeah.
Hey, I appreciate you guys very much being available. I know it's wearisome to stay with us, but I think just being faithful to the Lord and being watchmen in any way we can, I believe that glorifies Him. So I want to thank you, Stan, for your time and your work. I thank you, Lynn, and thank you, George Ann, and Dan. I look forward to the follow-up when we can allow you to spend time and sharing with your thoughts. So
right.
If there's not anything else, we'll just say goodbye, and we're just grateful for this time.
Well,
God bless you guys. Yeah. Good talking to you all.
Hold on just for a minute. Please visit Lynn Marzulli's website. He is the author of the Nephilim Trilogy, and he has a new book out. He has a very interesting blog that you should go and take a look at. Also, Stan Deo, I think everyone in the world knows Stan. Go to his website, standeo.com, and Stan has rewritten his book, The Cosmic Code. It's been updated. And
Cosmic Conspiracy.
Yeah, Cosmic Conspiracy. Everybody needs to get a copy of this book. It has a treasure trove. I read your book, Stan, years ago when it first came out, so I'm very anxious to get my hands on the new one. But I just want to thank all of you so much for being on the Bite Show tonight. And God bless you all and everyone out there that's listening. God bless you. Dig into this. Learn. learn about these things that these gentlemen have been talking about, because you're going to come face to face with it sooner or later. Good night, everybody.
Good night. God bless, guys.
God bless.